taking you to nonpartisan places you've never been to, and leaving you there. It's Common Sense with Dan Carlin.
Wasn't that stuff banned?
Only in the U.S. and Europe.
There are, of course, those who do not want us to speak.
If he hasn't made you mad yet, he will.
Well, I guess that makes our naughty parts tingle.
Common Sense with Dan Carlin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. My name is Dan Carlin, and this is Common Sense. We are your independent alternative to the partisan voices you normally hear. A ton going on today, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to deviate a little bit from the normal routine starting this program off today. And first, tell you that this is going to be a weird show. The fact that we're not doing our normal open should clue you into that. The fact that my voice sounds terrible should clue you into that. I am, I don't know if I'd call it sick, Ben. What would you call it? Just, you know, hoarse. The family's sick, and I've gotten a little bit of it, and it's in my throat, and so talking is not really going that well. Not just that, the last show and the response to it has been upsetting. And so I thought, listen, I'm going to go in there today, and we're just going to do one right off the cuff, you know, straight from the heart, as they say, and just lay it on the line. And that's what you're going to get today. This will be a completely unrepresentative show, and I hope you will forgive the way I sound. I'm sure it's painful to listen to. More painful than normal, right, Ben? But the main thing that I wanted to discuss today has to do with the reaction that I've gotten from some of you to the last Common Sense show we did. If you haven't heard it, it was, the main topic, I guess you could say, was about torture, and something I feel very strongly about. Apparently, so do many of you. I received quite a few emails after the last show questioning my sanity, I guess you could say. Is that a good way to put it, Ben? Questioning my sanity over the issue. And making all sorts of comments and asking all sorts of questions that, you know, in my head, I always think we've answered before. One of the things about the podcast medium that is a little bit of a trap for the host and for some of the audience is this idea that we've dealt with things before, so we don't really have to fill in the gaps and deal with them again. You know, in my mind and in Ben's mind, Ben will say all the time, we've talked about this, whatever we're talking about. Well, we've talked about this before, Dan. Yeah, in show 52, got a lot of new people. The problem is, of course, you don't want to subject the people who've been listening since show 52 to the same stuff, but sometimes it's inevitable. And judging from the reaction some of you had to the last show we did, they may not even be listening now, Ben. I may be doing a stupid thing here, doing a show to talk to the people that were upset about the last show, but who canceled their subscription so they won't even hear this show. But let's talk about it anyway. And in this discussion, hopefully there will be something of value for you. If nothing else, we will at least bring up some of the points that maybe have not been brought up before. First of all, a little recap. The last show dealt with torture and the idea of extreme rendition and some of the things that this country does as part of, trying to fight the war on terror. And obviously, if you've listened to this show for any period of time, you know that I would be against torture. Many of the people who wrote me emails might have thought differently. Some of you sounded stunned that I would be against things like extreme rendition. And many of you, some of you called me a wimp. Some of you, the vast majority of you used an example where you said, if it was your children who were going to die, you'd be in favor of torturing people. I thought maybe I would start there. First of all, one of the reasons we didn't go into some of the depth, you know, on the torture issue that we maybe should have, in hindsight, is because we've dealt with it before. We did a show, I had to look it up, show number 18 was called The Israeli Bomber Dilemma. And the Israeli bomber dilemma is what the Israelis have been wrestling with for a long time. The line goes like this. You capture a suspect, and this suspect has a bomb, or supposedly has a bomb that has been placed somewhere that's going to go off in an hour in some crowded area. The question is, what can you do to this person to get them to release the information that will let you defuse the bomb that otherwise will kill a lot of people? We did a whole show on that quandary. This, to me, seems to be what a lot of the people listening to the program were saying. And also that line, you know, if your kids were threatened, you'd be all in favor of torture, Dan. Well, my kids are threatened. And so are yours. And terrorists are probably the least likely threat to them. You know, right up there with being struck by lightning and shark attacks. What are the odds that your kids are going to get hit by a terrorist attack? Not very good. What are the odds that your kids are going to be taken by a, you know, molester or a child abductor? Tough to say. But see, here's the thing. The arguments that so many of you gave me, and as I said, excuse my voice, it's hard to talk today. But the arguments that so many of you gave me would work in so many other situations besides the war on terror. Why would you not use, if the arguments you want are applied, why would you not use torture against a prospective child abductor? We have a guy up here in Oregon right now. He's just been extradited from the American Southwest. He is a suspect in the, murder. No one's ever found the body of a BYU student, a young 20-something-year-old girl that was abducted off the streets of Corvallis, Oregon, 4 years ago now. Her name is Brooke Wilberger. And this guy was in trouble in the American Southwest for similar crimes that he's already been convicted of. Why wouldn't you torture this guy? Why wouldn't you put him on a rack, string him up, and start electroshocking him until he started telling you stuff? I guarantee you a lot of the people who sent me emails about this subject would be fine with that. So for those of you who say, Dan, you know, what if your kids were threatened? Well, my kids are threatened, and so are yours, all the time, every day. I see no reason, ladies and gentlemen, if you think that this torture thing is a good tool for law enforcement to use, whether it's international law enforcement or local law enforcement, why you wouldn't apply that to all sorts of other crimes. Why wouldn't you just take this guy, this Brooke Wilberger abduction suspect, into some torture room and start torturing him? Why not? Oh, yeah, that pesky Constitution. Those wimpy founding fathers of ours who wrote that line about, you know, prohibiting cruel and unusual punishment. Darn it. That Brooke Wilberger suspect guy is a lucky bum, isn't he? But what if he were an illegal alien, not protected by the Constitution? If you found an illegal alien that you suspected of abducting a child somewhere, you'd be okay shocking him? Taking him down to the local torture chamber and giving him a good one? I can hear people right now going, Dan, that's not what I said. You're taking what I said and twisting it, you know, into a different realm. We're talking about, you know, possibly nuclear terrorism here, and you're breaking it down to a lower level that doesn't make any sense. That's a red herring, Dan. Okay, let's talk about that. First of all, need to mention that a lot of people in the last month or so have canceled their monthly subscriptions to the show. We have a service where you can donate $3 a month or something to the program regularly. For the last month, people have been canceling. And I don't feel comfortable emailing them back and say, hey, you know, why'd you cancel? I'd like to know the reasons. I think, you know, we've been thinking, Ben and I have been thinking that it's the economy. But I don't want to hassle people. We're so grateful that anybody was giving us anything that, you know, it seems like pressure to email people back who might be hurting financially and saying, gee, why'd you knock us off the list? But after the last show, we lost a bunch of subscriptions. All I can figure is that people were appalled at my views on terrorism and torturing. First of all, for those of you who called me a wimp, let's get to that for a minute. I don't say this on the program very much because I'm not sure if there's any relevancy to it at all. But ladies and gentlemen, I have a degree in military history. How many people that you might call, I mean, you know, the classic wimp that many of you letter writers must think I am, spend their time getting degrees in military history? Spend their leisure time reading military history. I have 15 books I'm reading right now, and every single one of them, except for that one I'm reading on oil, Ben, are military history books. That's what I read for fun. You got to see the pictures in these books. But I think it's my connection to what I'm reading that keeps me grounded as to what we're talking about here. This is not an abstract thing. I look at pictures of dead bodies of people who have cigarette burns on their arms and legs from being tortured. And I got news for you. A lot of these people being tortured are bad people. I still wouldn't want to be responsible for the cigarette burns. And one of the things I wrote back to a couple of you, you know, once again, I have to say that if there's anything that makes me feel terrible about this whole program I'm doing is my inability now to get back to the people on emails. I get wonderful emails from everybody, and they always say the same thing. I know you're busy. Can you just respond to this one? Sometimes I do when I can, but Anyway, that's getting to me. I wrote back to a bunch of you, though, on this terrorism thing. And what I said was, if this is such a good idea, and if this is what strong people do, why didn't we torture the Nazis? You know, were our grandparents wimps? My grandfather, and I imagine many of you can say the same thing, was one of the roughest, toughest persons you've ever met. Would not have tortured or sanctioned torture with anyone. You know why? Because this rough, tough guy was somebody who would quote a line to you that it's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. Now, he also happened to be a policeman. And he knew what goes on sometimes in the basements of police stations around this country, especially in the old days. One of the techniques that they would use sometimes in some of these prisons is that they would hit people on the head with phone books because it didn't leave a mark. And it was sort of, you could call it, I guess, an unofficial torture policy. In other words, the country still doesn't officially torture, but if you get stuck in some of these jails in some parts of the country and they think you've done something bad, you might get hit with a phone book until, you know, you're knocked senseless. And what my grandfather might have said about that is that that was the safety valve in the system. The country wasn't for torture, but somebody on the scene might do something like that. The problem, of course, is, ladies and gentlemen, is that we ended up taking people who hadn't done anything to anybody and do that to them. If you think torturing in the war on terror is a good idea, well, why stop there? Every argument that most of you made in your emails to me could apply to all sorts of crimes and all sorts of situations and domestic situations. None of you answered the question I put in the show, which is, if it's such a good idea, why don't we do it in Kansas? There's a reason we do this, ladies and gentlemen, in other countries. That's because we're ashamed of it. And we'd be ashamed of it if we did it here. There's a reason the president of the United States doesn't get up there and say, yeah, you know, we torture people, because he's ashamed of it, or he should be. Are your children in danger from terrorists? Yep, and from 1,000 other things. If your torture is the answer that you can apply when your children are threatened, well, why would you ever just stop at torturing, you know, these terrorists who are a minor threat to your children compared to a bunch of other ones out there? You want to torture child molesters? I can't think of any more worthy group of people. We'll just set up the torture chambers now and do it. But my grandfather taught me something else. It's not whether you win or lose. It's how you play the game. What you do becomes who you are. A nation that tortures people is a nation of torturers. You're going to call... I mean, ladies and gentlemen, maybe you don't buy into the myth of the United States like I do. And I said in the last show, it's a myth. But if you believe in things like freedom and the Constitution and the ideas this country were founded upon, how can you rationalize that with torture? And if you say, listen, Dan, those ideas are fine when you're not threatened, but we're talking about the real world here, and people are going to die, and you're going to let them die because you're going to have some crocodile tears for some bad guy. Do you think it's really going to stop with the bad guy? The founding fathers talked all the time about things like the freedom of speech, and they would say that, you know, you don't need to protect the speech that isn't offensive. You need to protect the stuff that is. Well, the reason you have to protect the bad guys from torturing is because eventually that's going to filter down to a whole different level. Why didn't we torture the Nazis? Didn't they deserve it? Can you think of anybody worse? But we didn't. Why not? And again, there may have been Nazis who got hit in the head with phone books, same way police departments in this country have been conducting things secretly, in some cases, for a long time. But when they do, how do you feel? And here's the problem. For every person that deserves being hit in the head with a phone book so that you can find the, you know, bodies that they've buried or something, they're going to hit a bunch of people in the head with phone books who haven't done anything on the grounds that they might have. Torture filters down to a different level eventually. Do you have no lines in the sand at all, folks? Understand something. This war on terror is not as big of a threat to us as the Second World War was. Why didn't we torture people then? It's not as big of a threat to us as the Cold War. but we didn't set up a Lubyanka prison in Kansas to handle the Cold War situation. Was Dwight Eisenhower a wimp? Was Lyndon Johnson a wimp? Then there's the other side to this, folks. How good is the information you get from torturing? You're going to sell your soul to save all of us, and you're going to torture people to prevent nuclear terrorism or whatever it is, possible nuclear terrorism. And yet, are you going to get anything of value for your soul in that deal? The FBI doesn't think so. Don't know how many of you have paid attention to the discussions on the use of torture. The FBI disagrees with the CIA and some of the Pentagon folks about whether or not the harsh tactics get you anything of value. We didn't bring this up in the last show either, Ben. This was something that was back in the Israeli bomber dilemma as well, show number 18. But the FBI believes that the good cop attitude's working better with terrorism. The CIA, at least up until a certain point, believed the bad cop idea was working, or they didn't care. See, here's the deal. What the FBI has been doing is offering incentives to the bad guys to come around to our point of view. In one case that I read about, they had one of these bad guys captured, and his wife back in the Middle East needed an operation. And the FBI befriended this guy, and were trying to turn him. You know what turning them means, right? It's what you do with secret agents when you turn them into double agents. You take an individual that's working for the other side, you give them cigarettes, you know, you give them money, you give them whatever it's going to take, and you turn them into your guy, and then they're giving you all the information freely. Well, the FBI used your tax dollars to pay for an operation for this guy's wife in the Middle East. And he said, if you pay for this operation, I'll tell you what you want to know. The wife actually was handed a cell phone in the Middle East as she came out of the anesthesia from surgery, talked to her husband here in the United States in captivity, said, yes, they just did the surgery. It worked out great. He hung up the cell phone and started talking to the FBI. What's more, you just made a friend in the war on terror. You just turned somebody in a hearts and minds war. Folks, if you're looking at the torture situation as just involving our torturers, whether they're us or the Egyptians or whoever, and the torturee, you're missing the big picture. This war we're fighting in the war on terror is a hearts and minds conflict. I'm sure many of you have military history backgrounds as well. You know what a hearts and minds conflict is, right? This is not a war you're going to win with bullets. This is a war you're going to win by being the superior moral force. Guess what torture does to that? You don't think they talk about what we're doing in the Middle East? You don't think this becomes a recruiting tool to recruit the next generation of bad guys? Look at it logically, ladies and gentlemen. You want to protect your kids from being the victims of terrorism? Don't you have to stop terrorism? Stopping terrorism doesn't necessarily mean stopping the next bomb that's going to go off. It means stopping the next generation that's going to go off. Having the guy whose wife got the surgery paid for by U.S. taxpayers happy with us, even though he might be a bad guy, is a victory for us. Because that guy now becomes a friend in a war on terror where the hearts and minds of the other side is what we're out to capture. If you think the war on terror is going to be won when we kill every last person who hates the United States, then, well, you're going to lose. The number one thing in winning a war is assessing your victory conditions. What are your victory conditions in the war on terror? You need to stop violent extremism. You don't stop violent extremism through violence. You hurt the other guy. And look, folks, look at these people in the Middle East. They haven't forgotten a negative thing done to them in their whole history. The reason you can't get a handle on the whole Israeli-Palestinian, you know, Arab situation is because those people haven't forgotten a wound in 2,000 years. Every success we get from torture, and I don't know how many we've had, is a long-term defeat in terms of getting these people to drop their idea of violent extremism. Now, is it wimpy to consider the victory conditions in this? Well, Dan, you know, they waterboarded that Sheikh Mohammed, and I don't have any problem with them doing that to him, and he started squawking in 2 seconds. What do you say about that? Well, first of all, let's talk about the information and whether it was any good or not. Don't know. Also, if Sheikh Omar Mohammed or whoever the guy was talks when you waterboard him and you get a minor victory from that, is that going to compensate you for all of the other cases out there? All those people in Guantanamo Bay right now, how many friends have we made? I don't want to make friends with bad people. I want to kill them. Okay. Except those people have children and cousins and uncles and people who are going to then turn around and avenge what we did to their relatives. It's not whether you win or lose. It's how you play the game. Except how you play the game in this situation is going to determine whether you win or lose. Being the superior moral force is going to allow us to win the war on terror. And I don't mean it like some Christian preacher saying we need to be the supreme moral force. No. There are going to be good guys in this war on terror, and there are going to be bad guys. The only way we lose this war on terror is if we can be painted as just as bad as the bad guys. Torture aids the victory conditions of the other side. And again, you want to start that rationale about, well, Dan, if it was your kids who are threatened, you'd be all in favor of torture. We'd be torturing the people at the local jail. If you torture Nazis that you capture in the Second World War, doesn't that make you somewhat more like a Nazi than you were before? When we fought the Soviet Union in the Cold War, the Soviet Union, I remember learning about, you know, what Ronald Reagan called the evil empire back in the 1970s when I was growing up. And one of the things they used to tell you was all these awful things that the Soviet Union would do to you. One thing, I don't even know the way I'll phrase this, Ben. This is, let me think about it. They would, I'm just going to say it. I mean, I hope I don't offend anybody, but one of the things that the Soviet Union would do, and I remember learning about this, and this was, it would make you wonder what kind of human beings they were. One of the torture methods they would use was they would insert a glass tube in up the male genital, and then they would break the glass tube. That was a torture method. Isn't that horrible? Well, I don't know. Was it effective? If it was effective, do you want to steal some of that idea? Anyway, Ben, it's just what's upsetting to me, ladies and gentlemen, is the people that fought the Second World War, my grandfather's generation, were tough sons of bitches. They really were. And if they captured some Japanese, runner on an island in the Pacific, and they thought that guy could tell them where the hidden artillery piece was, they might have held lighters underneath the guy's feet, or worse, until he told them. That sort of stuff happens all the time in war. There's a big difference, though, between something like that, which my grandfather would have said, hey, you know, war is hell, things like that happen, circumstances sometimes dictate you do those kind of things, and having a policy at the highest levels of government of doing it. If Franklin Delano Roosevelt had instituted a policy of taking Japanese captives and torturing them for information on where the next Japanese attack was coming from, my grandfather would have been outraged. The same man who would have been okay with them, you know, holding a big lighter underneath that captured Japanese runner's foot. It's the same attitude he had about hitting someone with a phone book in the basement of a police station and having a policy at, you know, the national level that said we do that. My children are threatened, folks, just like yours are. Is that going to turn you into a monster because of your paranoia? What makes us better than the old Soviet Union? Well, we operate under a different set of rules. We're not torturers. The bad guy, I mean, folks, ladies and gentlemen, you used to be able to tell who the bad guys were simply by whether they met the torture standard or not. Those people who say, look, we will do whatever it takes to protect ourselves. Really? Really? The reason that our culture is superior to the old Soviet Union is because our values are different. They're better. And the number one value that we have that they weren't is they were evil. And they were evil because they did things like torturing. How can you say that the fact that our children are threatened makes evil okay? Because I got news for you. The Soviet Union thought their children were threatened too. If you employ evil to achieve a good goal, how do you avoid being tainted by the tactics you used to achieve those noble ends? It's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. And that the reason that matters is because in the end, you become what you do. If this country is about something better than those regimes in history who've done terrible things to protect themselves, don't you have to actually live that? Or are we a people that mouth these platitudes when it's easy to do, but when the rubber meets the road, we talk a different game? You know, it's easy to say, I'd be a hero in war if I ever was, if somebody threw a grenade into a group of my buddies, I'd be the one who fell on the grenade to protect everyone. Really? Only one way to find that out, right? Gotta have the situation happen to you. That's when you find out what you're really made of. In a war that involves us being the better guy, if you stoop to the level of the bad people, what sort of case can you make to the people who we have to convert in this war that we're worth converting to? What, just the stuff? Hey, listen, America's great. Look at all this stuff you can buy in the stores. Hey, America's great. Look at all the TV choices. America's great. Look at the money you can make. No. America's great because we're the shining city on the hill. We're a bunch of idealists. We have a country, as one great man said, the only one in history, founded on a good idea. The good idea was liberty and freedom and a higher level of moral standing. You do what all these other countries have done throughout history, and you lower yourself to the torture standard, and you lose that special status. And I don't know about you, but I'm not going to cross that line in the sand that says you don't torture people. Because, folks, when you take a line like that, that our ancestors had lots and lots of better reasons than we have for crossing, and they didn't cross it, you go to a place we've never been before in this country. A place where you can start making arguments that, hey, if we do this to people in other countries that we capture on the battlefield, why wouldn't we use it against that guy that maybe abducted poor Brooke Wilberger from Corvallis? After all, he doesn't deserve your sympathy, and we might find her body, and we might learn all sorts of information about other people dead, and why are you crying crocodile tears for that bad guy, Dan? Well, that's one step more than it was before, right? And then it's one more step to say, well, we have this suspect that we don't know has ever done anything wrong. Why don't we use it against him after all? You know, he's a bad guy. Look at his record. Folks, once you cross that line in the sand, that line of death, isn't that what was it, the Libyan leader, Muammar Gaddafi, called it once, a line of death. Once you cross that line of death, ladies and gentlemen, there's nothing that prevents you from making more and more legal and rational arguments, legitimizing the same sort of tactic for all sorts of things we don't use it for now. After all, our grandparents wouldn't believe we were using it, period. And if that wimpy attitude is something that causes you to cancel your subscription to the show, then you're just going to have to cancel it.
Feel free to email the show at dan@dancarlin.com.
Visit the website at dancarlin.com and get involved with the community discussion group online.
Go to dancarlin.com for information on how to donate to the show.
We also want to thank you all for posting reviews on podcast sites and comments and blogs about the show. It's really helping.
This is normally where we would do the segment that we call the Benathon, which is like a combination telethon and the word Ben. And you've heard us before, probably, so you know we use this little segment as an opportunity to ask for stuff from you. And we've always thought that it was a kind of a cute, semi-funny, sort of humorous way to do it, because I don't like asking you for stuff. It's not really a part of my nature. But I have to tell you, I really am sick today. And what's more, I'm feeling rather serious, both about the topic that we just discussed, which I know I stepped on a few toes again, and the topic we're about to discuss, where I'll step on some new toes. And I just want to let you know, as you all do probably already, that we make a living on this program, you know, such as it is, based on what you're able to donate and the merchandise you pick up or whatever. And that's how we'll continue to either do this or not do this. So if you can afford to, in a tough time of recession, we'd appreciate your spare change. But we also know that a lot of Americans are hurting. A lot of people all over the world are hurting. And if you can't afford anything, well, we sure understand. Tell a friend about us. That is, if we haven't stepped on your toes so badly you want to tell a friend about us in a bad way, we sure understand that too. Maybe I'll just thank you for all the support we've had and tell you that, you know, one way or another, we wouldn't be here now without your help. So thank you, everyone. And hopefully when I'm feeling personally better and when circumstances dictate, we'll be in a better mood and be able to give you our normal, you know, semi-humorous, at least in our eyes, Benathon. You know, I should be thinking about a different subject, Ben, but I'm still thinking about that monologue we did. It was a 30-minute monologue, which is really long for us, and I still didn't even get to a bunch of the things that people on the discussion board have been discussing. And by the way, anytime we have one of these topics that just gets you going on the show, know that there are people on our discussion board at dancarlin.com from all political stripes talking about it. One of the things I thought some of our listeners did a very good job of bringing up was where the torture line is. I mean, you know, we can all agree that shocking somebody with electroshock while they stand in water is torture, but is keeping them up at night, you know, and not letting them ever sleep torture. So there were some very good points brought up on the website. If you'd like to weigh in on this, we'd love to hear from you. It doesn't matter what your viewpoint is. One way or another, you'll have friends on there. Let's just put it that way. Rather than go there, though, just know that I probably could have done 3 hours on that. There are so many torture angles. I'd also like to apologize for bringing up the same subject in the show we did last time, once again, so quickly. I try not to do that, but I got to say, I was a little affected by the reaction. In any case, go to the discussion board if you need to get a little of this stuff off your chest, and you'll see that they're really trying to do a good job, you know, finding where lines are and whatnot. And I always respect those people quite a bit, and I'm on there as well, so good way to get involved in the conversation with yours truly. If you'd like to head on over there at dancarlin.com, we'd love to have you. What I wanted to bring up in this segment, and once again, please excuse the voice. It's all I can do to talk today. I wanted to talk about what happened the other day in the Libertarian Party. For those of you outside the United States or who don't know, the Libertarian Party is traditionally the third largest party in the U.S. after the Republicans and Democrats. Now, there have been times when they've fallen to fourth place. When Ross Perot and his Reform Party were big in the early 1990s, I think the Libertarians were probably knocked down a peg. But if you're into third parties and more choices than just the Democrats and Republicans, as I am, you can't help but watch the Libertarian Party with interest. For those of you who don't know, the Libertarian Party's platform is traditionally much more constitutionally centered. That might be a good way to put it, than the Democrats or Republicans. Much more likely to advocate the kind of government the people who founded this country were into. Generally small government, generally fiscally conservative, generally socially extremely liberal. And for those of you, say, in Europe, that's something that you don't get with the Democrats or Republicans. The Democrats will give you socially and fiscally liberal sometimes. The Republicans will give you socially and fiscally conservative sometimes. But if you want a party that thinks that people should be allowed to do their own thing until it hurts someone else, and they have a broad idea of that, and thinks you should live within your means, fiscally speaking, that's what the Libertarians push. You can understand why there's a lot of sympathy among people in this country for, the Libertarian Party and at least its ideals. Now, there's a reason why the Libertarian Party, though, hasn't done better, and I think this system needs a viable third party, so I was always rooting for them. The reason they don't do better is because, well, to quote a line that's been used about the Palestinian people in the Middle East, the Libertarian Party never misses an opportunity to miss an opportunity. And the other day, they didn't just miss an opportunity, they might have stepped on the landmine that ruins them for a generation. They nominated a guy for this run to the White House that is, in my mind, the antithesis of a libertarian. Now, I have never, ever liked the Libertarian nominees, which is a strange thing to say for a guy who's got sympathy for the Libertarian idea. I've been highly critical in the past of the people that they tend to make their presidential candidates, because in the past, what the Libertarian Party would do, and I know even if you're not a Libertarian, you may be going, why do I care about this, Dan? Well, you care about this because this is the party that has the best chance of all of breaking the duopoly, you know, the Republican and Democrat stranglehold on this country's politics. And because of their ineptitude, continual ineptitude, they fail at that role, thus leaving us with the duopoly. And the other day, they proved once again that they never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. Normally, what the libertarians do is they take a very boring and very studious and very academic person and nominate that person for the run to the White House. There have been several extremely intelligent candidates that they've put forward who couldn't motivate you to cross the street. We all know that politics is partially the art of persuasion, and that having a good orator at the head of your party is always a benefit. The libertarians have never had a good orator. And I know that there's people listening in right now to my voice who are going, Dan, you're crazy. I listened to Harry Brown speak 10 years ago, and oh, I was so moved. I've heard Harry Brown speak. It put you to sleep. Listen to Ron Paul, who's basically a libertarian. Ron Paul's got some nice ideas. He's fun to listen to, but he's not a good speaker. The libertarians have the most emotional message to Americans of all the parties. They hearken back to a revolutionary way of thinking. You should be able to get up there and, like William Jennings Bryan, you know, really scream from the rafters like a preacher. You ought to be able to take that ideal the libertarians have and run with it. But the Libertarian Party seems to have a problem, and I think it's that, you know, it's an inferiority complex. I think they're worried about not being taken seriously. And so I've always thought that that's what leads to them nominating people who seem so studious and super intelligent. And it's because, well, how can the American people, you know, write that guy off? Well, Harry Brown is so smart. How can they write him off? He'll get up there and he'll make this argument, you know, so rock solid everyone will be forced to admit, yes, you know, what he says is true. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the Libertarian Party hasn't had a candidate ever that has galvanized the masses. These studious people that I think that they put forward, these professorial types, because they want to be taken seriously, turn everybody off. Well, everyone who's not already a libertarian. The libertarians should be nominating people who are fiery speakers, who can hit people where they live emotionally about the country and the values and the, you know, ideals of an extremely emotional issue, liberty. But they don't do that traditionally. Well, they've taken a step backwards, if that's possible, with this latest nomination. Do you know whom they just nominated for president, Ben? Former Republican Congressman Bob Barr. Ladies and gentlemen, if you had me compile a list of the least likely people to be nominated for, say, the Libertarian candidate for president, Bob Barr would be right at the bottom. You know, bottom 10. To me, putting Bob Barr as your presidential nominee is an admission of complete, utter, and total failure. In my mind, the libertarians have just proven why they don't deserve to be the nation's third party. For those of you who don't know, I encourage you to go online, because I don't want to get into Bob Barr's record more than I have to. But Bob Barr is a 1992 Gingrich Republican. He was one of the lead dogs going after President Clinton for the whole Monica Lewinsky thing. He is a huge proponent of the drug war. And just to show you that he's a good politician, a man who basically made the drug war one of his top five platform issues when he was a Republican, has now completely turned to the other side and is now pushing for the repeal of a bunch of measures that the other Bob Barr, you know, the one who was a Republican office holder, pushed through Congress. To me, that should disqualify him right there. And now, understand something, folks. Bob Barr was not picked by a bunch of party, you know, insiders who just picked him. He was picked by basically the people at the convention. And what's more, the other people at the convention were, I mean, Bob Barr may have been the worst of the nominees, Ben, but had the other people been picked, they suck too. The Libertarian Party, I mean, you could make a case, Ben, if you were like a fiction writer, you could say that the Libertarian Party must have been co-opted by Republicans and Democrats in an attempt to make them even less relevant. Otherwise, this whole nomination doesn't make sense at all. I had dreams, too, Ben, of a Libertarian Party. Wouldn't it be great? The country needs a third party more than anything, and the efforts at creating one have been bizarre and profitless. How's that for a couple of terms? I mean, look at Ross Perot's attempt to create the Reform Party.
who just a few years after Ross Perot leaves the scene, they nominate our old friend Pat Buchanan to be their representative. How different from Ross Perot and the values that he was trying to bring to the table, weird values though they may have been sometimes, how different is his position from, say, Pat Buchanan's? Well, what happened, ladies and gentlemen, is the Reform Party became the equivalent of a corporate shell. Do you know what a corporate shell is? A corporate shell is a company that has all of the necessary skeletal foundations of a company. It was probably, you know, a real company once, but everything that was in that company sort of been pulled out of it. And now it's just waiting for someone else to take over the structure. Oh, we're already on the stock market. We already have an office. Everybody already knows our name, but, you know, we don't have a company or a purpose or anything. So somebody else moves into that corporate shell, takes the structure over, and then, you know, does something different with it. To me, the Reform Party was a perfect example of how ambitious individuals are looking around saying, okay, I need an organization and I need one now. Hey, there's that Reform Party. They're nothing, but they already are on the ballot in all the states and they've got all this organization. We'll just take that political version of a corporate shell over. Well, in my mind, ladies and gentlemen, if you read Bob Barr's comments, he's a man who was looking for a political corporate, the political version of a corporate shell, and he found one in the Libertarian Party, which should tell you something about the state of the Libertarian Party. Now, I've been discussing this with some folks, and one guy made a great point to me. He said, Dan, have you ever thought that Ron Paul's recent success, you know, that's the funny thing, Ben, can you believe it? We're calling Ron Paul's recent run a, you know, virtual success, because if he'd have been the Libertarian Party candidate and done as well as he's done as a Republican, they'd be screaming to the high heavens about how great it was. And yet, you know, he's getting 2%, 1%, 3% in some of these primaries. But if he'd have been the Libertarian candidate, that'd be a huge victory. The person I was talking to was saying that perhaps Ron Paul's and the excitement he's created and all these people that have gotten on the Paul bandwagon, maybe that's hurt the Libertarian Party. And maybe it has. But to me, nominating Bob Barr as your candidate, well, I wanted to say it's like raising the white flag. But it's worse than raising the white flag. It's like raising the Republican flag and like your party's been taken over. And you turn around behind you and you're fighting the good fight if you're a libertarian out there. And you turn around and the Republicans have captured your fort. And the guy they expect you to support now is a guy that libertarians loathed 8 years ago. Well, loathed 2 weeks ago. Bob Barr is a disaster for the Libertarian Party. And to read, I mean, go to their website. They're liking Bob Barr, Ben. Which means, to me, they've gone the same route as far as, you know, undercutting their own values that our country faces over the torture issue that's still on my mind a lot more than Bob Barr. And they've just co-opted everything that they're supposed to stand for. And, well, I mean, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to be someone who sees the duopoly hurting the country and pleads and hopes and prays for something of an alternative that Americans can choose, and sees the most likely alternative now co-opted by the very people who gave you, you know, Hertz and Avis, Tweedledee and Tweedledummer. Now they run the libertarians too. It reminds me of a hostile takeover, Ben. Everybody has this company that just comes on the scene, this upstart company that everybody likes, and then when your back is turned, they get bought out by the same old people. I don't even know what to say about that. I'm bracing myself, though, for the extra cancellations now, Ben, when the libertarians out there start canceling their subscriptions to the show because, yeah, Dan, you did a hit job on Bob Barr, and he's seen the light, and he's converted, and blah, blah, blah. Ladies and gentlemen, anybody whose policy now involves him going back and opposing and trying to repeal the very things he passed that have his name on them, well, that to me is a sign, isn't it? It's depressing, I think, to sit up here sometimes and discuss things that seem to be getting farther and farther away from reality. To discuss breaking the duopoly in this country is becoming harder and harder because it's becoming more and more of a fantasy. And the more that the viable options that you would look at as the ones who are most likely to break the monopoly, the more that those places seem to, I mean, folks, if you were a fan of the Reform Party and Ross Perot, how do you feel now? If you were a fan of the Libertarian Party and you wanted to see somebody who genuinely believed the ideas of libertarians. How do you feel now? And if you're one of those people that don't care, and you say, well, Dan, it doesn't matter. The Libertarian Party's the party of principle, which is one of their slogans. And if they nominated Bob Barr, you can bet your boots that he's seen the light, or they wouldn't have nominated him. After all, they're the party of principle. Folks, I know Bob Barr. I've followed his career for years. This man is not a libertarian. This is a man who was looking for a structure that he could run for president and raise the status of Bob Barr. And the Libertarian Party has said, okay. And all I have to say to that is that, well, they're going to get what they deserve. They used to be a party that couldn't win, but that at least stood for something. They're turning into a party that can't win and that doesn't stand for anything. In which case, they're going to get what they deserve. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that those of us who have to live in a country with a duopoly running things, who can run campaigns that are negative simply based on, hey, we know you don't like us, but they're worse. Well, we're going to get what we deserve too. One of these days, somebody's going to get up there and they're going to have a voice and they're going to have a message and they're going to have a chance to make some real changes, because those people come around every now and then. It's almost an odds game. Eventually, the right libertarian candidate is going to come along. The one the party's been waiting for since its founding. And unfortunately, if that candidate really is a person of principle, they're not going to want to run as a Libertarian Party candidate. Because after all, that's the party of Bob Barr. If you have a different opinion, you know I would love to hear from you. Head on over to the discussion board, too, and let's have a conversation about these things. If you're angry with me, well, tell me. And don't tell me in an email that I don't have time to answer. Get on the discussion board. I'll be there. www.dancarlin.com. We are suffering from the recession just like everyone else. If you're not suffering, we'd love your spare change. If you are suffering, just tell a friend about us. That is, if you can still stomach us, Ben, right? Obviously, we're stepping on some toes. Working on a new history show for you, as always, and reading my military history stuff, as always. And, well, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 20 days, as soon as we can. We'll get another one of these audio commentaries out for you. Until that next time, thanks for everything, folks, and I will leave you with that.
We also want to thank you all for posting reviews on podcast sites and comments and blogs about the show. It's really helping.